As a female entrepreneur and business leader, that's been really hard for me to get the balance right because I'm naturally very feminine and soft, and then you spend all day in a very masculine energy of it's very much get shit done, tasks to do, you've got teams to manage, you've got big projects and deals on the go. That's been a really interesting one that I've been learning about.
In today's episode, I sat down with one of Australia's top female entrepreneurs. She is the co-founder of several companies, including one of the top modeling agencies here in Australia, including The Right Fit. You've built how many businesses now? Many.
Wink, The Right Fit, The Influencers Agency, Hash Gifted, Notable, and Influence PC. So, I'm tired.
You're tired.
You need That's the word. I'm tired.
We talked all things entrepreneurship and especially how to discover the inner grit within to do what's absolutely necessary to create the business of your dreams.
It's really hard to find the time when you're like growing businesses and all of a sudden it just like years fly by so quickly.
We talked about her journey of starting several companies from scratch, having to go to investors, sit in big conversations and learn things the hard way.
You can never predict when you're going to break the foot. Like, that's such a good analogy. Yeah. Like, I've had periods where I've had four or five businesses and three broken feet, you know, in those businesses. So you're like, this is not ideal.
And we even went into the dating life behind a successful female entrepreneur and what that's like and how she navigates it.
I spend a lot of time like dating people for roles. Like, spent a lot of time going on long walks with people, a lot of phone calls. A lot of phone calls, like a lot of really trying to get to know them and seeing who they are as a person, because I can train the skills, but I can't train the attitude, the aptitude, the appetite.
This episode was juicy. You're going to love it so much. If you're brand new here, welcome to Dream Nation. And if you're coming back, welcome. Now help me and welcome the one and only Miss Taryn Williams. Taryn, welcome to the podcast.
Thanks for having me. I'm super excited to be here.
I'm really excited to have a conversation with you. It's not very often you meet someone who's just a thoroughbred entrepreneur, crushes it in so many different avenues, but then also as a female. Because one of the challenges I've had on this podcast is we've probably, the mix for sure is like 80% men and 20% females. And it's just awesome to see someone like you absolutely killing it. So I can't wait to extract some value here.
And I will work hard to change those stats for you and find you some more amazing females to get on here.
Let's get it. So I have a question to kick this off. So what's something that most people wouldn't know about you that you would say has been one of the things that's helped you be as successful as you are?
Wow. Okay. All of the deep, dark secrets. Look, to be honest, I think the older I get, the more I reflect on the things that made me successful. And I think a big part of it was how my parents raised me. And it's not until the last probably 18 months, 2 years that I've started reflecting on what that looked like. Like, they were just, they gave me so much autonomy in a non like super hands-off way. They're really caring, loving parents. But they always created this safe space for my sister and I to go and try crazy things and always make it okay that we would have, you know, a loving home to come back to if we failed or fucked it up or whatever. And so, for example, I decided I wanted to get my pilot's license. I was like, it's very important. I'm going to learn how to fly a plane. I was 15. Yes. I was like, got to fly a plane. I'm going to get my pilot's license.
You have it?
Yep.
And I have my skydive license, so we can go hang out together.
Perfect. I'll fly you jump. Yeah. Deal. And, you know, you can imagine a normal parents being like, that's absolutely crazy. No, you're 15 years old. And they were like, fantastic. Save up your waitressing money from your weekend shifts and we will drive you there and you can get your pilot's license. And so they were just like really, I think, super supportive, but also really helped us understand the world more broadly and explained finances to us and investing and treated us almost like little mini adults. So I think that's definitely something that I probably didn't reflect on enough or acknowledge enough. So big shout out to my folks. They did a good job, I think.
Are you a mum?
I'm not.
Plans for?
Oh, maybe. I mean, I guess it's one of those things that I thought would probably just always happen. And then I'm like, holy shit, I'm 38. I probably need to like get my life together and think about that. But it's really hard. I don't know if you have children, but it's really hard to find the time when you're like growing businesses and all of a sudden it just like, you know, years fly by so quickly. So
let's pretend you're a mother.
Yep.
And you have a 5-year-old.
Yeah.
Just random number.
Okay.
Knowing the things that you've learned that you say your parents did well that's made you the way you are, what would be some things you would do to raise your 5-year-old so they not only like because I have thought about this as well. I'm like, I wouldn't want to try and construct my kids so they are an entrepreneur.
Yeah.
But my mission would be I want them to have a super high self-worth.
Yeah.
I want them to have a strong self-esteem. And then from there, they can find their own unique things and gifts and bring it to life.
Yeah.
So what would be some ways that you would go about raising and communicating, especially with your 5-year-old, knowing the things you know?
It's so true, right? And I think because we think about how much the world is changing and how quickly, like, what do you even teach them? Like, is maths and English even going to be important in the future? They'll have AI tools and everything that will do all this for them. So I actually have thought about this a lot. I think it's really about, like, creative thinking skills, like giving them the freedom and the space to explore the world and like, free playtime, like, filling their own agenda and calendar and having to be creative and giving them a bunch of boxes and go make something out of it. I think critical thinking, especially because they're going to be in this world of disinformation and misinformation, like, how do you actually evaluate and make really good decisions, like vetting your sources? And I think trying to be calm and reasonable with them, obviously their prefrontal cortex isn't as developed as an adult's, but giving them that opportunity to, I guess, be reasoned with and explained to, because I think I see a lot of parents who are just like, no, you can't have that, or no, you can't do that, instead of explaining, like, this is the reason why and this is how we're going to do it and you know, potentially you could have that later if we do these things, and does that make sense to you and do you agree to that? And I guess giving them a little bit more autonomy and freedom in decision making. So I can imagine it will be very hard, though. I'm sure I say all of these things now. And when you're tired, it's like everyone, you know, it says, I'm never going to give my kids iPads. When you're tired and exhausted, you're like, Jesus, just shut up and let me sleep. So all good in theory.
Yeah, it is a thing. Like, I've thought about, like, I'm 30, so kids are not in the...
Yeah, not on the radar. Yeah.
Not in the very short-term future. But I have thought about it. It's like, because of all the work I do, so everything I do is in the personal development space, and I'm helping people unlearn all the things I've learned.
Yeah.
And I've had people come into my room that have been like, I was an orphan and I got raped at 5 and this and the most crazy wild shit you could ever think of. And now I'm doing all these things. And I've also had people come in the room who have been like, I had a perfect family. My mum and dad loved me and I have trauma because they didn't love me enough. And
it's
and it's like, you know what? Parents can't fucking do anything.
Get it right.
Anything
exactly. Exactly.
And it's almost like their job to actually go and fuck you up, but then give you the resources available so you can start to unlearn it. That's why I'm like, even the space I'm in, my kids will probably still have all their own shit and be like, oh, dad traumatized me. Probably.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah. So
but
true.
That's why I'm like, I'm going to make it a mission to just increase their self-esteem, because I think that's actually probably the biggest issue with people not going after the things they want or achieving what they want is not believing that they can actually have it.
Yeah. I couldn't agree more. Mm. And I think doing that personal work and self-development is so important, and it's not taught in schools. I see so many people who are older than me who still haven't got a grasp of what it is that drives them, their behavior patterns, the fears that are like all of that underlying programming and that they've never picked apart. And you go, can you not see that you know, you're really being driven by fear here or scarcity mentality or whatever. It's just so disappointing. It really should be like compulsory in schools to do a lot of this work.
Mm. Where did it begin for you in the personal development space? Like, do you remember the first book you read, first mentor you had?
Yeah, I mean, I had amazing mentors. That's definitely where mine started. I've always had psychologists or counselors in sort of chunky periods in my life when I was going through something difficult, like a divorce or a big business problem or whatever. But I'd never had one consistently throughout my life. I definitely reflect on that. I think it would have been nice to have the same counselor or whatever all the way through. And you think about all the other things that you maintain, like you don't just go to the gym in chunks of, you know, like got to get fit, then it's not for 2 years. Like, I really think you got to maintain it like everything else in your life. So that's definitely been a reflection. But definitely my mentor was the one that got me into it. And it was really a sort of gentle guiding process of being sort of calling me on some of my less than desirable behaviors, I think. Mm-hmm. I would gently say it and being like, are you kind of aware that you do this thing when you maybe feel out of control? Or can you see like how these kind of things, there's a consistent pattern here? Like, maybe that's... And so I think it was having someone call me out on it, because I think, I don't know if it's this way for anyone else, but generally your friends and people around you, something will happen with in your life, you tell them your side of the story and they're like, yeah, totally, like you're 100% right.
Yep.
Like, because one, they're only hearing your side of the story, and two, like they're not a professional, they're doing the best they can with the skills they have, but no one's actually going, oh, that's interesting, and what do you think, like how do you think you got to that point? And where do you think the other person's view was maybe on that? And, mm-hmm. and so if, unless you have someone in your life sort of doing that and helping you start to think more self-reflectively about your own behaviour and taking stock. And I think it was also the case of getting stuck in repeated patterns and going like, I don't like this. I don't want to be here. I don't enjoy this period or whatever it might be. I want to be better than this. I want to grow. So then it was about going and finding the resources and the tools to do that.
I love it. So I know you went to university.
Yeah.
You went to university. You've done all the things.
In Canberra,
ticked all the boxes. But someone like you, you've built how many businesses now?
Okay.
Many.
Wink, The Right Fit, The Influencers Agency, Hash Gifted, Notable, and Influenced VC. So six.
Six. And you're also in the middle of a new acquisition. Like you're just... You're crushing it.
I'm tired.
You're tired. You
need That's the word. I'm tired.
So what I'm curious to know is, so you've gone to university, you've done all these things, the traditional education, but there's no way you would have learned the things you know there. So where did it come from?
I was surrounded by a lot of people in my late teens, early 20s that I probably didn't realize were entrepreneurs. So it was like, I'm 38, so, you know, 20 years ago, that wasn't a thing. Like, being an entrepreneur was not a thing. So it was like, I guess people who had like small businesses or were like self-employed. And because I was modeling and traveling with that and around a lot of like great photographers and creative people, a lot of them were self-employed. But I also had, a lot of friends who owned restaurants or clothing labels or whatever it might be. So I think for me, I didn't have that traditional pathway to then, you know, go and get a job, move up the ranks, and ever have that fear of going out on my own and doing something. And I think that really gave me this perception that it was safe and okay to go and do your own thing, whatever that was, whether it was working freelance or starting a business, or because I didn't have that big leap to take to like quitting my full-time job with my safe salary. I'd never had that. So I think that's probably what shaped my appetite for going into like this entrepreneurial journey. And I certainly learnt a lot of things through mentors, and I was also super, super, it's a combination of like self-confident, like not having the self-confidence, really wanting to be a bit of a perfectionist and wanting to let people down. So like a hideous combination there. And so I was like, determined to do a really, really, really good job. And so I would just punish myself and like go and, you know, do weekend courses, go and like read, you know, buy all of the books I can get my hands on, read all of the online articles, just like try and desperately be better and upskill myself along the way. And that's probably the one thing when I look at, you know, people in my team or that I've worked with over the years, I think that's the thing that sets the people apart that do go on and do something amazing with their life are the ones that are just hungry and thirsty for information. Like, they just want to get better. They're you know, consuming content, podcasts, like at a rate of knots. Because I think it's definitely what makes you a more well-rounded person too.
Yeah. If we were to open up my computer right now, I would see probably 20 tabs. And about at least half of them are actually courses.
Yeah, yeah.
And I'm always got something happening. Like, there's never silence in my ears unless it's actually penciled out, go have a 30-minute silent beach walk.
Oh, good,
you know, which gets you just creative during those times.
Yeah.
If you were to put a number on it, do you know how much you've invested into personal development?
Oh, my gosh. That would be truly terrifying from a financial number. Yeah. I mean, this year alone, I went to like down like a real, I call it like a little bit woo-woo like path. Uh-huh. But I just was like really getting really interested into like way more sort of spiritual things like astrology and kinesiology. Got a Chinese doctor, an acupuncturist, like a real team on top of like the traditional stuff of like courses and a psychologist and all of those things. But yeah, so I mean, God, this year alone, God knows. But I've also gone and done a lot of international like training courses and yoga retreats, meditation retreats. And I'm terrified to think it would be hundreds of thousands, if not millions of dollars. So
it's a direct correlation. Like, I remember when I first started investing in personal development, a lot of people were like, why are you doing that? You know, and now I've actually calculated I'm nearly $300,000.
Yeah, okay.
And that's in courses, mentors, masterminds, coaching, all this stuff. But I can also bring it back to, like, there's nothing ever still that's brought me a bigger ROI than that. You know, and if some crazy ass shit like COVID ever happened again and everyone's businesses had to go, or the government turns super communist and they take everyone's businesses or who knows, right? Let's say you take everything away from me. You can never take away the knowledge.
So true.
And never take away the things that I actually know and who I am as a person. And it's played a huge part.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more.
I'm curious, the spiritual stuff you talked about.
Yeah.
What's one thing you've become aware of in the more spiritual side of things that has helped you be a better person?
This concept of masculine and feminine energy. Mm. I think when I'd first heard about it, maybe, I don't know, 3-4 years ago, I was like, oh, this is just like traditional gender roles, like women being soft and feminine and whatever, and men being like, you know, the breadwinner and, you know, doing masculine things and building a shelf or whatever. I totally misunderstood the concept, and that it's much that we all have masculine and feminine energies in us, that it's much more about, you know, how those energies interact. And so you can't have two people in any kind of relationship, a working relationship, a personal relationship, where you've both got really strong feminine energies or masculine energies, because it's like that yin and yang symbol. There needs to be like this intersection and a little bit of balance of each in both. And so I think as a female entrepreneur and business leader, that's been really hard for me to get the balance right, because I'm naturally, you know, very feminine and soft, and then you spend all day in a very masculine energy of like, it's very much get shit done, you know, you've got tasks to do, you've got teams to manage, you've got big projects and deals on the go, and then you come home and you walk through the door and it's like resetting and unwinding, and it's very mentally and emotionally taxing, because you're sort of living in not your natural state. So that's been a really interesting one that I've been learning about.
Yeah, so I'm curious on that, because that is one thing. So when I interview entrepreneurial females, like female entrepreneurs, because it's dark masculine energy is get shit done energy.
Yeah. It
doesn't matter if you're a man or a woman. It's like if you have any hustle or grit in you, the execution energy is masculine.
Yeah.
And some entrepreneurial women don't know how to balance it out. And that's when, like, when I work with them, they're like, I'm just always on, or I'm just, and they lose touch with that creativity side or that emotional side of them. And when I first met you, I was like I was actually thinking, because like based off all the things you've done, I was like, she's gonna be pretty masculine, but you're very grounded and sweet and like feminine.
Oh, thank you.
So how did you, throughout the years, like, what is your process of, like you said, when you're at work, you're on, and it's good you understand that you've got to get on it and get shit done. Especially as like a CEO, you can't really come in with like a, oh, right, care about everyone's feelings. Like, no, you got to look at data and be like, you got to go, right?
Yeah.
And so the process of you then coming home and actually consciously switching back into more feminine, what does that process look like for you?
Yeah, I've had to become really conscious about the energy I invest outside of work in what I do to support that feminine energy. So I used to do, like, for example, lots of high intensity training and like HIIT training. You know, I trained in one of those altitude rooms. It was like fully intense, you know, and like CrossFit style vibes and whatever. And I've completely changed that to doing just yoga, Pilates, long walks, not getting my heart. Like, so things like that, where I've been like, okay, this is conscious time to crafting and honoring that feminine space for me, because otherwise I could just push through my whole day being like this, you know, really go, go, go and get shit done. So I've had to really be very conscious of that and making much better decisions about what that looks like. And then I do have to have almost like rituals to try and break that time between work and home. So it used to be when I drove to, I can walk to the office now. So when I drove to my old office, I would drive home and make very clear, like, mental time in the car to unwind, to stop, drive down the driveway to my house, and it would be like a deep breath, like before I come in the house and before, like, making sure there was a real energy reset. Now I walk home and it's the choice of what I listen to on the way home. So usually on the walk to work, I'm listening to like the daily, you know, a news podcast or an economics or politics podcast or something. On the way home, I try to make it something either something that can still be knowledgeable, but like a softer or gentler podcast, or music. So just really trying to break the day into those pieces.
Are you married?
I'm not.
Are you got a partner?
I do not.
Okay. How have you how have you seen that dynamic play out throughout your entrepreneur, like the whole dating scene as a...
I was married and then I was engaged. So I've had two sort of big significant relationships and a bunch of others. And it's really hard to find that balance, I think, of people, a male who's successful and strong and secure enough in themselves. Not, you know, some people are always like, oh, you know, you must be very intimidating. And I'm like, no, I don't think it's that. It's that my life requires quite an interesting set of interests or skills for someone to be comfortable in, because I obviously have a very big commercial life, but then I also have, I'm heavily involved in the arts and culture. I have a modelling agency, so I go to a lot of fashion events and parties and things like that. So it's actually quite a difficult role, I think, for someone to feel like, okay, this is, I get this. I feel like I know how to slot into these events and feel or these different, very, very serious to sort of lighter spaces.
Do you think it's hard for men to date women who might be more successful than them?
I think it takes someone who's very secure in themselves and knows themselves and doesn't see it as a challenge. And then the also like very pragmatic, realistic part of it is the time. Like usually when you're both very busy and very successful and driving at big goals, you don't have a lot of spare time, you know, to be able to... My last partner lived overseas, and so we would do like 4 weeks here, 4 weeks there, 4 weeks in Europe.
That'd be hard.
You know, and that was really hard because we're both sort of, everyone was compromising at something in their life. And yeah, so that was certainly very challenging. So I do think it takes a strong, secure sort to really know themselves, know what they want, and be able to and want to like champion and advocate for someone else. So,
do you think if you were, let's say you're with a man and they crushed it, that was just so financially successful where you didn't have to think about or worry about business anymore?
Yeah.
Do you think you'd still do what you do?
No. I would definitely still do what I do. Yeah. It's,
you said no first.
No. Yeah. Oh, sorry. That's not what I thought you were going to ask.
The unconscious one?
Yeah. Possibly. Exactly. Freudian slip. No. No, I have had a partner that was a billionaire and you know, retired and very much didn't. It certainly meant I had to change how I approached some of my projects in the sense that there was, like, I guess, a little bit of an understanding that some of his projects were larger and required more time and energy commitment and geographical commitment from us. I'd go crazy if I didn't work. I'd be horrible to be around.
So you'd do it for the love of just business and...
Yeah, and like I love solving problems. Mm-hmm. I love the challenges that it brings. I love the... So I think even if I didn't have to do it for money, I would still be, you know, I'm on the board of a think tank and not-for-profit at the moment. You know, so I would still be involved in lots of projects that stimulate me mentally and challenge me and continue to kind of... test the edges of my limits.
Yeah.
I'd be a horrible stay-at-home mum, you know, Pilates wife, you know. No, you know, props to the people that love that and can do that. And but yeah, I would just be horrible at it.
Because that's one thing I've talked about with my partner, because she's asked me, she's like I said, like our goals, she'll quit her job this year.
Yeah.
And so we're actually getting some property, and stupid enough, like, we can buy a fucking property outright in cash if I want, but because I have a business, the banks don't favor it. Right? So, you know, like, so we're definitely planning for once we've sort of got some things in place that she's going to quit. And I said to her, I'm like, you can just like literally like chill. Like, I want you to like, don't worry about work and stuff anymore. But at the same time, cause she's like, would you want me just to be like stay at home? I'm like, no. I'm like, no, because what I want is, and this is just my needs. Like, there's some people out there who's like, I just want you to be at home. What I do know is when she doesn't have to stress and worry about money per se anymore, she'll be able to really step more into her feminine. She'll naturally want to do more things and support that duality. But I also love the fact that, you know, she's a little bit like you as well. She just wants to create stuff and do shit.
Yeah.
And I think what excites us is when she has that freedom then, she will probably start some businesses from passion, you know?
Yeah.
And because I think if she was just like, oh, I'm just going to chill now, you make the money, I'd be like, that doesn't excite me in a relationship.
Yeah.
I like the ambition.
Yeah.
And it is a, the reason I'm asking is because sometimes ambitious women think, not saying you do, but sometimes I think this whole in the relationship world, because I think it's a man's issue. If the dating dynamic with someone who's doing more successful than them, because like you said, someone who's just secure, like that should be the goal.
Totally. You know, and that doesn't necessarily, I know so many people who are financially secure and who are still not secure in themselves. Those two things don't necessarily go hand in hand.
Yeah.
I'm sure you've met many deeply insecure, unhappy, really wealthy people, you know?
Yeah.
And so I think they can certainly be mutually exclusive. And I think finding that true, like, inner peace and security and safety in yourself hopefully makes you more successful in a commercial capacity because you're choosing the right product, projects that align with your sort of values and core beliefs, and you really, you know who you are and how to execute. But I don't think financial security is the be-all and end-all. It certainly takes the pressure off. Like, I do know, obviously, so many relationships that struggle because of financial issues.
Yeah.
And I can imagine that would be incredibly stressful and challenging. So I think it certainly removes some of those pressures.
Yeah.
But certainly doesn't – you can't buy happiness.
And the goal for a man, I think, especially because I've seen – I think I was coaching a woman one time and she's like, I have this belief that – because she's very ambitious, pretty successful. She's like, I'll never find a man who's better than me because most men want to pick down. Per se, she was used that. She's like, men usually, and women pick up. I'm like, well, firstly, it's just a belief. But also, secondly, I think you hit the nail on the head with it's the security inside of a man. Because if I'm thinking right now, if I was to, you know, if my partner was wildly more successful than me, I know I'm doing my own shit anyway. And I'd be like, that's just so cool because as long as you're doing what you love, I don't care if you make more money than me. That's cool.
Yeah.
I mean, get a better house.
Yeah, exactly.
Like that's cool for me. Like I don't care, but I think I can definitely see how some guys could look at it and feel like it's a hit at their ego, which is it's a self job.
Totally.
I've got to work on that shit.
Yeah. Amen.
So I'm curious. Your business is right now. You've got the modeling agency.
Yeah.
What's your view on AI and where that's going? In terms of in your industry?
Yeah, it's going to be fascinating. Like, we're already starting to see, like, you can obviously create AI images for e-commerce
Like models. With people.
Yeah, exactly. So gone are the days, I think very quickly, where you will book models every single day to shoot e-commerce shots, you know, for the Iconic or whatever. Like, you just won't need to. You'll be able to recycle heads and bodies and create multiple different personalities as well that match different user personas. So different skin colors, different ages, different body types. So, you know, I think once they perfect that, that will certainly have a big impact on our business. I do think that there's going to be this real, and I think we'll see it sort of more broadly across advertising though, is this shift towards consumers wanting content that they trust. And I think that's going to be really hard. I think there'll be this interim period where brands will go, okay, there's a very quick cost saving in making AI-generated content, you know, whether it's stills or videos or whatever. And then I think we're going to see a huge consumer backlash on, I want content that I can trust, not just for advertising content, obviously, but for all of the content that they consume. So I do think we're going to see a resurgence of like traditional print media, the value of those, you know, like the CNNs, ABC, BBC. Like, I think we will see a real value in those titles again, and people will really deeply appreciate the value of good journalism. So, but yeah, I certainly think it's going to be a weird and wonderful time.
Yeah, it is bizarre because I was playing around with some AI the other day and like, you can punch in, have like a person pop out wearing a t-shirt. Like, and I'm like, that is fucking mental.
And it's all about the prompts too. Like I have a photographer friend who's really into AI and he will write fantastic prompts and say like, okay, I want an image generated that's shot on a Canon camera with this kind of aperture. This is the lighting setup, blah, blah, blah. So he will write all of, and it can ingest all of that information and create it. It's phenomenal. So yeah, the better you get with prompts, the better the content is.
Does it concern you?
Oh, look, I think AI generally concerns me as a human being, less as a business person. I think I think it's more likely that it's going to, you know, exterminate the human race than I have to worry about my particular business, you know. So I definitely think I'm an AI optimist. I do think that we will find a way to harness these technologies for good. I think that we need to take, you know, quicker and further action on regulation and also obviously just helping general consumers, people understand the implications that AI is going to have, because I think if we don't understand that, there isn't going to be that support for sort of government intervention and big business intervention to really... So I think that's really important. But I am overall an optimist. I do believe it's going to be jobs accretive. I think we're going to see more jobs made out of this than we are going to have lost. But I do think there's going to be a really scary interim period.
Yeah, it's very interesting. Like, you see Elon Musk has just created the robot.
Yeah. He's a very special character as well.
Like, if it was anybody else, I would be more concerned. But because it was Elon, I'd be like, oh, okay. But there is still a part of me, I don't know if you think the same, but there's still a part of me that feels like Elon is playing life right now, like a chess game. And I wouldn't be surprised if something happened where he just switched, not in like an evil way, but switched in sort of like a way everyone thought, yeah, Elon switched in a way where he's like, yeah, bitches, I fucking own Twitter now. You all love me. I own all your cars. I own all these robots. And he's like, I'm in control now.
I think that he seems to be a deeply troubled person.
He's interesting, eh?
Yeah, I feel like there must be a point you get to where you become so isolated from naysayers. You know, you don't get to hear any of that feedback we were talking about earlier where people are like, do you think this behavior is serving you? Or, you know, I think you kind of get to this point where it's sort of a self-fulfilling prophecy. You have these great people around you telling you great things and that you're awesome. And so you start to believe, you know, you're... indestructible and brilliant, and I think it seems to me that he is not mentally super well, and not surrounded by maybe some great people. I think he's undeniably brilliant. You know, I think he has obviously created some incredible companies and innovations, and you know, decades ahead of his time. But I think he's now getting to a point where he's doing some of his behavior is, I think, really unsavory. You know, bullying people online and some of the things he says, I think is just really distasteful. And I think he's now getting to a point, yeah, where he's maybe not being surrounded by great people to moderate some of this behavior.
He's an interesting character. Mm. I just think, like, since COVID, I think we're just living in a fucking strange ass world.
Totally.
And it's the most uncertainty I've seen in my life. Yeah. I don't know about you, but I'm still just like going like 1 year at a time.
Yeah.
Going like, because it's like the things you do now, I'm just not getting too attached to things, because I even read in Stephen Bartlett's new book, he's talking about the speed in which the world's changing.
Oh, yeah.
And I'm probably going to completely butcher this, but essentially he was saying, like, you know, 100 years ago, how much change we would have in humans would takes X amount of time to get this much change. Now, to get that same amount of change is happening in about 7 days.
Yep.
And he's like, so the more progressively we're going, the amount of how much change we're having in the world with just technology and the world and everything is just happening so freaking fast, and it's only speeding up.
Yeah.
So the things we're doing now, I'm viewing as just like not getting too emotionally attached, because you might have to completely pivot in a year.
Yeah, totally. And it's, I think, you know, one of the main skills that you need to learn is that resilience piece. Like, I think if people don't have adaptability and flexibility and resilience and the desire to learn new skills, and I think that's where you get really stuck, because I think you're right, all of us are going to have jobs and careers that change now, like irrespective of what field we're in, what we're doing today is definitely not what we're going to be doing in 5 years time. So I think being able to adapt, being flexible, and I think probably having a positive lens and view on the world, I think is really important there as well.
What's up, Dream Nation? Have you ever wondered how far ahead your life would have already been if you had got access to this type of content at a younger age? Look, this is why I need your help. I'm trying to build the number one personal development platform out there to teach you guys the tips, tricks, and attitude of what it takes to live your dream life and to bring the type of education that we all wish we had in school. This show only grows by word of mouth and new subscribers, so it would mean the world to me if you could smash that subscribe button right now, leave us a 5-star written review, or drop a comment below and share this episode with a friend. I would be forever grateful. All right, now let's get back into this episode. Has there been any moments in your career that you've literally thought, like, we're not going to make it through this?
Oh, God, so many. Yeah. Like, when I raised venture capital for The Right Fit, like, you raise a finite amount of money, and so you have a finite amount of time to make that work before you have to go and raise more capital.
Yeah.
And you can only do that if you've improved the metrics of the business. So, like, you can't just like burn through a bunch of cash and then be like, shit, run out, got to go get more. Like, you got to grow the business and then go, we said we were going to grow the business from A to B and we grew the business from A to B and then people go, good, now we'll give you more money.
Right.
And so there'd be some months where we were burning like $150,000 a month and I'd be like,
in
oh
what?
My God.
Like wages?
Oh, yeah, everything. Like just wages, everything. You know, building the platform, marketing costs. Like,
and this was before you started generating money from it?
Yeah, it had revenue coming in, okay. But certainly not like, obviously it's still burning $50,000. Yeah. So it was pretty significant amount. And so, yeah, there'd be days where I'm like staring at the ceiling going, how the fuck am I going to make this thing work? And like, is this a terrible idea? And the immense amount of stress and strain that you're under because you're like, oh, I need to make this work. I've, you know, raised money. I've taken cash from people that I've made a commitment and a promise to. And there'd be times where you just go, oh, you know, it could be we re-platformed, for example, like we'd built the Right Fit and we were re-platforming, moving to a new platform, to PHP Laravel framework. And I remember the night we switched it over, despite all of the best testing and everything that you think you can possibly do, like we just had so many bugs and I was like, oh my God, like is this going to be it? Is this going to scupper us? Like it was just, and I remember it was like probably the three most painful weeks of my business life was just like, fuck, you know, what have we done? Do we switch it back? Do we turn it off and go back to the old platform? Like it was hell. So
talk me through that journey, right? Cause like raising capital as well. So, because the people listening to this, there's a vast majority of people listening to this. They've got businesses, they're thriving, they're starting business. And then there is those unique businesses like what you've done where you've got an amazing idea and you've got to raise capital and get investments. Mm. I've never done that. I wouldn't even know where to start except for calling my rich friends and trying to pitch them. But before I had that network, if I had to raise capital, I wouldn't know where to fucking start. So walk me through that period of, was the Right Fit the first thing you started?
No,
you had the modeling agency,
right? Yeah, Wink Models was the first one I started. So I started that at 21 and then I built a end-to-end onboarding calendar management and payroll integration software for that business. That's how I fell in love with tech and I was like, oh, I want to like, should have made this like an open source platform or I should have used it for like more verticals than just modeling. And so that's where the idea came from. So then I started, built the Right Fit.
So the Right Fit is what you had to raise money for?
Yeah.
So talk me through, your first 1, 2, 3 years in this, the times where you're thinking, how's this going to work? It's not going to work.
Yeah. So I was fortunate that I had a business that was cash flow positive and I was just bleeding it dry to fund this business to start. So, you know, that was great. You know, we probably had, I don't know, maybe 4 people in the team or something like that. So we had a pretty small team in the Right Fit to get started. And at some point we were like, okay, what does this look like next? We need to go and scale this or grow this. And I'd actually gone to see a friend of mine had put me in touch with someone who was a venture capitalist. And I'd actually gone to see him to say, at what point do you recommend people quit their full-time jobs and go work on their like side hustle full-time? Because technically I have a full-time job. I own this other business that's really successful and growing and great team and blah, blah, blah. When would you recommend I stay in that and I just like hire someone else to run this thing? Is there particular metrics that you look for and say, well, yes, once it's doing, you know, this much MRR or when you know, got this kind of liquidity plan, then I'd let, you know, so I was like, you know, what could that look like? Or do I stay with this one? And, you know, I could just put in a really great team and just do one day a week or something. And he was like, no, it's an amazing idea. You should definitely go in full time and we'd be happy to back you. And I was like, oh, right. Okay. Now we're raising venture capital. Okay. Shit. So, which was the reason that was good is that it was not a conscious decision to be like, okay, we're going to go out and raise capital. Like, this is what we need to go do. But it sort of, I guess, started the process organically in a way that I was not yet prepared for. So I was like, okay, I guess we should do this. Like, if venture capital believes in us, we should probably like seriously think about that. And
so you just pitched him the idea of like, this is what I'm thinking. And
I'd built the business but it was only like maybe 3 or 4 months old. And so I was like, this is what the business is doing. This is how it works. This is what it looks like. You know, this is sort of metrics we're doing. What do you think? And he was like, yeah, it's a great idea. Go. And so then we went, okay, we're going to raise a full round and really scale this thing, like really throw some fuel on the
fire. Can I ask how much you raised?
We raised $775,000, I think, in the first round. $775,000.
Okay. Yep, yep.
And then we raised about $2 million in the second round.
Yep.
And so I was like, okay, right, what do I actually really need? Of course you need cash, right, to hire people, grow businesses, blah, blah, blah. But I also wanted really smart people around the table, and it's one of the best things that you get when you raise capital. If you raise good capital, you get really smart people who are all of a sudden shareholders in your business and they really want it to do well. So they open doors for you. They will sit down and solve problems with you. Sometimes they'll join your board. So it's a really amazing way to get people who are literally invested in your success. Like, they really want that business to grow and they really want to help you. And most of the time, they've been on this journey 10, 20, 30, 40, 50 times before. Like, they're either involved in many companies or had many exits. So they've learned all of the tough stuff that you have to learn.
How did you work out how much equity, if you're to raise capital, how do you work off that? Because you constantly valued at nothing in the beginning.
Yes.
How did you work that out?
Yeah.
Not give away too much.
Yes, yeah. So obviously you want to try and get the best terms you possibly can. But there's some usually pretty standard metrics. So generally they would say raise about 18 months worth of runway. So how much money do you need to run the company for 18 months? Assuming that your business is not cash flow positive yet.
Yeah.
If it is, great, then you're raising money for growth, which is a different type of capital. But you're going, okay, if you had to run this company for 18 months, how much money would you need? Then I'll always put a little bit more on top because you're like, it's probably going to cost me more than I think. And then you go to market and you say, this is how much money we need. This is what we're going to use it for. There'll either be two, you can either price it yourself and say, this is what we think the business is worth. And they usually take into consideration a whole bunch of things. So like who the founding team is, what the idea is, the total addressable market, like how big is this opportunity, how unique is the idea, do you have any sort of proprietary tech or offering, how likely is this going to succeed, like have you had a bunch of successful exits under your belt before? Yeah. That's the sort of things that will set the price. Otherwise, the market will set the price for you. So really it's like, how much is someone willing to invest and on what terms? So some investors will say, well, look, we're willing to invest this much money. We want a board seat and, you know, we're valuing the company at $5 million pre-money valuation. So $5 million before they put the money in, that's the valuation.
Right.
So, yeah, it sort of depends.
Interesting. So so there's companies out there. I know one of your new companies is kind of like that. So we can dive into that soon. So for little Sally listening to this going, I've got an amazing idea and I want to raise money.
Yeah.
Are there people out there that she goes to?
Yep.
Like, how do you find these people?
Yeah, yeah. So there's like professional investors. So you can go to, it usually starts with what you were saying before, like family, friends. They call it family, friends and fools. So
yeah,
like,
foolish enough to get within 5 feet of you.
Exactly. So that, you know, people usually go to, you know, the people that they know first.
Yeah.
And then you'll generally go to angels or anyone that will invest seed capital. So there's like lots of groups out there. There's like Sydney Angels Network. There's so many angels organizations. And it's basically people sort of like you and I who might be willing to invest $50,000, $100,000 here and there in businesses that we feel like we can add value to. And then there's professional venture capitalists. And so there's now a bunch of these in Australia and internationally, obviously, and they are professional investors, and that's what they do. They look, they usually back sort of early seed stage companies, sometimes mostly pre-revenue, sometimes in that, you know, sort of early phase of growth. And they are, it's obviously high risk investments for them because 90% are going to fail. 10% will be the next Canva or the next Atlassian, but the rest are probably going to fail or do, you know, mediocre metrics. So, yeah. Generally, they take a larger percentage because it's high risk. So, and then after that, you'll go and raise more rounds of capital or move into like private equity, like bigger stage funds.
So you go through this process, you raise nearly $1 million straight up.
Yeah.
And then somewhere in the middle of all that, here's you laying on the floor of your office questioning how is it all going to work. Walk us through that. What were the struggles you were facing?
Oh my gosh, just all of the struggles of growth, right? Like you're looking at the metrics of a business and you're going, okay, I need to 10x this thing, right? Like that's what I need to do. I need to get us from where we are to, and I need to think about international expansion. I need to think about new revenue streams. I need to think about the product roadmap. So like what am I building into this to get product-led growth? Like what things can I build into the platform itself, referral mechanisms and all of those things? What's our marketing strategy? How do I increase the lifetime value of the customer? Like how do I get that person to stay with us for longer, post more jobs each year, book more talent? How do I increase the average order value? Any e-com person has heard, you know, struggled with that one over time. And how do I decrease the cost to acquire a new customer? So like how do I get my marketing spend to be more effective? So you're just constantly grappling with all of those things. So you're trying to grow the business, and then because tech companies grow so quickly, the person that you hire today to be like your marketing manager is not going to be the same person that you need in 6 months' time, because you're growing and your problems are like exponentially larger. So it's so hard to get the team right, the culture right, the process right. So you're dealing with the day-to-day minutiae of like, what color should this button be? Or like, I don't know, what days of the week should we do EDMs? And then you're like, oh my God, I need to think about, you know, how we, what's the strategy for launching in the US? It's, yeah, it's a wild, wild ride. Mm.
When it comes to hiring people, I'm assuming you've hired many. Have you got any like, because this is the thing I'm going through, right? Like really I'm hiring and firing and I'm like, and I fucking know humans. Like,
yeah, yeah.
I can tell more about someone in 5 minutes than they know about their whole life. And I still fuck it up.
Yeah, it's really hard.
I hire them, I'm like, where was the person that was in the interview?
Yeah.
I'm like, fuck. So have you got something that's worked for you in the hiring process that you've proven like, this is a great question, or this is the way I like to think of?
Yeah. I wish I could say there's a silver bullet to this, because it is I think the single hardest thing in a business is getting the people right. And getting the people right and then at the right time. Because sometimes you can have an amazing person, they're really great for 2 years, and then they get divorced and their life is chaos and they're like, you know, they're checked out or whatever. Or, you know, something personal happens, or they move or whatever. So getting the right people at the right time in the business is so hard. There's a couple of common threads I've started to see in people that end up working out in my businesses.
Mm-hmm.
One, they usually have a passion for exercise. They're healthy, they're fit. I think that's probably a mindset thing. Like it's less about caring about appearances, but it's more about they value sort of challenging themselves.
Thing.
And yeah, exactly. So they've usually played team sports in high school or university.
So they've got a competitive edge to them.
Yeah, yeah. And they've had to work hard as, you know, a team that's trying to achieve things. Again, like it's about not letting people down, you know, all of those things. There's no ability, what I found is to look at someone's resume and go, you know, because you've performed well at company A mm-hmm. and B and C, you'll perform well here. Just does not seem to correlate at all. I've tried that. Nor does what they studied seem to have any relevance to whether or not they're going to be successful in the role. I spend a lot of time like dating people for roles. Like spend a lot of time going on long walks with people. A lot of phone calls. Yeah. A lot of phone calls, like a lot of really trying to get to know them. And seeing who they are as a person, because that's I can train the skills, but I can't train like
the attitude,
the aptitude, the appetite. Like, you know, I think having a thirst for knowledge, and I've just hired an amazing chief of staff, and like she just has such a thirst for knowledge and passionate, driven, and I could see it a million miles away. Like when I first met her, I was like, yes, you will be joining my team at some point in the future. Like I will headhunt you and I'll, you know. So I think it's, but I've had more not work out than I have had workouts. So.
Yeah. It's, you know, like I've thought lately, like I had this false sense of all I need to do is put a couple people in and then business is going to be good.
Yeah.
And I've come to the realization over the last like 6 months, because I would say like I've been in business since 21, but proper my own corporate hiring for maybe 2.5 years now.
Yeah.
So I'm really in the process of learning more things of scaling and operations and shit, which I fucking hate, by the way.
Yeah.
and I've just come to terms that it's never actually ever going to be perfect, or it's never going to feel like it's even working.
Yeah.
Like it's always going to be a continual, there's always just going to be cogs that have broken and things, and that in itself just is business.
Yeah.
Like there's always, like you said, like you hire someone amazing and then in 2 years something happens, and that's just part of it. So I've come to terms now that like this is just a massive marathon, and maybe on one of the laps you break a foot and you need to rest for a second, and that is just the game.
Yeah.
And you let it rest, so and then you get back in the race.
Yeah.
I'm curious to know, on you've got many businesses, how do you manage your time and energy across the different ones?
Badly. Badly. And you're right, because you can never predict when you're going to break the foot. Like, that's such a good analogy.
Yeah.
Like, if you could foresee that, then, you know, I've had periods where I've had, you know, 4 or 5 businesses and 3 broken feet, you know, in those businesses. So you're like, this is not ideal. So that's the really hard part. If you could predict, okay, I know these are really key busy periods, or I know this person, I had a fantastic employee leave one of my businesses about 7 months ago to move overseas. And I was like, no, I really need you to stay right now because I'm just about to launch another business. Like, this is not good timing for me. But of course, like, you know, Godspeed, you can never, you know, you can't hold someone to ransom for just because you've got another business to start. So it's really hard. generally, I have pretty good teams across all of the businesses, and they can kind of make the magic happen.
Are you the CEO in all your companies, or
no? Okay, no, not in two of them, and I'm hiring a CEO for one of them.
So your goal has been to just hire great people to run the entire thing. You step out and play the investor director role, kind of.
Yeah, I have, because I have a quite bizarre skill set. So like, I have deep domain expertise in a very particular.
Unique set of skills,
exactly. And very much like you, I've realized I'm not good at a whole bunch of stuff. Like,
yep.
I don't enjoy it. I could learn to get better at operations, but I don't want to.
Like,
that's very immature, you know. But I don't want to, and it's probably not a good use of my time and energy. So I would prefer to apply that, you know, deep sort of skill set. Narrow but deep, as opposed to going being like a generalist.
So if I was to look at your calendar.
Mm-hmm.
How does that look for you to maximize your energy and output across the areas you need to? Have you got a way that's worked for you of, like, you know, through the time blocking and yada, yada, yada? What sort of works for you to be able to put your focus into the most productive things across all of these things?
Yeah. So I get up early and I train every day, and then I start my day early, and I try and get probably an hour worth of work done before my teams come online.
Usually
it's a case of like catching up across the board. So like reading all the Slack messages, reading all the WhatsApp messages, reading my emails, getting a feel for like what's going on and if there's anything that needs urgent attention that day or that week. And then it will be very fluid. So like, as I said, I've got a deal on at the moment, so my day can get totally hijacked because there'll be things that are like critical, have to happen today.
Yeah.
There'll be other times where it's like business as usual across the board, and so it's like, okay, generally I have a call with my team from Hash Gifted every morning because they're basically, we've got a team in San Francisco, so that's the best crossover time. So I'll have an early morning call with them. I usually have a once a week check-in with the team at Wink. I have a once a week check-in with the team at Influenced VC, and I've got that's a really great team, and they're all sort of senior high performers, so it's a very different kind of beast. And then the rest of my day is sort of generally outward facing activities. So it'll be external client meetings, or it will be PR activities, or things that can't be done by anyone else in the organization. And then sort of probably from 6 p.m. till 9 p.m. is internal stuff. So anything that I have to be involved in across the board, like approving payroll or reviewing a marketing strategy or something. So that's the only sort of clear time that I get in the day is to.
Have you found any, because I think like me and you think the same. I've got two companies,
mm-hmm.
We just sort of acquired another company. So kind of three. And the other day I was at a Christmas dinner with some friends. I was talking with one of my friends who's a UGC creator.
Oh, yeah.
And within an hour discussion, I'm like, we're going to create a UGC agency. So I think this week I'm about to start another company. And I'm balancing going, do I do it or not? Because I get so excited because I'm very good at strategizing and creating new things. I can see big potential. And so what I said to her, I said, I can do this as long as I'm not in the business. I can't work in this business. Yeah. I don't have the bandwidth for us to know that. So have you found something like a good measure to know of when do you know, oh, this is a good opportunity and I could start this and we can crush this? Or do I keep all this energy and put into what I'm doing and make these even better?
Yeah, because the pain is definitely in the execution. This is what I've come to learn. Like, I'm very much like you. Ideas, great. Opportunity, I could just put these three things together. Amazing, it'd be set and forget. And the pain is in the every single day grind of like getting those businesses going.
So you
especially
start something
for the
and
first.
You're like, fuck.
Yeah, it always takes more time, energy, and effort than you thought.
Yeah.
The only thing that I found that works is having lots and lots of really uncomfortable conversations up front.
Mm.
Sitting down with whoever it is that's going to be involved in that project, whether it's a business partner or a CEO, and having things like those conversations that may have felt a little bit unnatural, but down to like, these are my expectations around what this role looks like. This is exactly the kind of capacity and time that I can give to this project. This is the future state goal for me. Like, I only want to have this business for 2.5 years, then I want to flip it, or then I intend on, you know, rolling it into this other group or whatever. Having a lot of those really uncomfortable conversations up front so everyone's on the same page, and talking about the things that people don't ever want to talk about. Like, why your shareholding should be the way it should be, mm-hmm. you know, why their salary is going to be the way it's going to be, or, you know, what your expectations are around capital investment, and all of those things that are just a little bit uncomfortable for people to talk about. And everyone goes into businesses being like, yay, this is going to be amazing, we're going to work so well together. And then, like, that resentment builds over time where you're like, I'm doing so much more, or this person's dropping the ball, or all of a sudden they've had a kid. Like, get all of that stuff out of the way up front. Like, are you having a kid in the next 12 months? Are you, you know, what's your approach to holidays? What's your approach to work on the weekends? You know, are you going to get pissed off at me if I send you a WhatsApp at 6 o'clock at night? Like, how's this going to work?
Yeah, that's some important things. Tell me about your new business you've just started. Yeah. So we've got Influence VC.
Yes, yeah.
Tell me about this.
So it's super exciting. I'd been kicking it around for a long time, but I didn't have the right person to execute it with. So essentially what I could see from both sides was that influencers were trying to create brands, and creating a brand is fucking hard. Like, going and finding, firstly, coming up with the idea, then going and getting manufacturing. Like, if you're doing a beauty product, it's like, you know, all of the formulation. If it's a clothing line, you're like, how do I do sizing? Finding the supply chain, dealing with all of the logistics and operations, marketing, website, sales, customer service, like, nightmare. But they're like, I've got this really cool idea, and I know my customer base like no one else. Like, I know that they, you know, I'm a health influencer. I know they want this activewear, or they want this particular protein. And so I could see influencers trying to do that, and that was a real struggle. And then on the flip side, there was brands who were obviously always coming to one of my many businesses about wanting to work with influencers. And they were commanding, you know, they can command really large fees, and brands would just have to have these always on social strategies to work with influencers and content creators. And I was like, okay, there's something here. Like, what if we could just pair these two people and influencers could take an equity position in brands and help them scale? And there were so many great influencers, like Tash Oakley with Monday Swimwear, like Young Rich Lister, Emily Sky with her fitness app, like, who had, you know, worked tirelessly to build these amazing brands, and, you know, so incredible, but it's really, really hard to do and such an outlier case. I was like, why can't we make that the case for all great creators to be able to partner with brands that they're really passionate about and build meaningful long-term wealth? Because, you know, you've probably seen, like, Aesop just exiting for, I don't know what it was, like $3 billion.
No way,
and
did they?
Bondi Sands for $400 million. Like, you know, so these companies are selling for, you know, exponential valuations.
Yeah.
And so many of these influencers are like, wait, like, I helped grow Bondi Sands, or like, I worked with, you know, whatever it was, GoTo Skincare that just, you know, sold half of it for whatever it was, $90 million.
Wow.
I only got paid whatever, $5,000 for my one post. Imagine if I'd taken an equity position instead, that would be worth, you know, $500,000 instead of the $5,000 that I got paid. So, and it really solves that problem for a brand where usually in that startup phase, they don't have the cash available to go and pay someone $5,000, $10,000 per post, but they can actually get access to those people who have audience, who have reach. And more than that, they are already experts in that particular field. So they're already a beauty expert. They can connect you to Sephora. They can, you know, help get your product PR opportunities. There's so many things that startup wouldn't have the opportunity to do if they didn't have this kind of access to these experts. So, yeah. So it's it'll be launching in February.
That's already super cool.
Some pretty amazing celebrities and taking creators. Investors. And we will be probably late next year. So I'll let you know when the round's open.
It is an interesting way to think about it, like, because I've even, because I'm kind of setting it up. So my Dojo Media company, my podcast agency, I went into business with that with one of my mentees. So one of the guys who went through my programs, he hit us up and he's like, can I just film for you? He's like, can I just come? I'll film for free. I just want to get access to you. I was like, that's smart, fucking smart guy.
Yeah.
Yes, you can. You see,
I like that hustle.
Started filming all my shit, doing my content. And then we just built a relationship. And I was like, dude, your content's great. Why don't we do this together? He's like, bang.
Yeah.
All right. We started that company. And with the UGC, it's another one, women who have gone through my, with my events. And because for so long, I would coach and mentor people on their businesses and no equity.
Yeah.
And I've even thought about the same thing. I was like, I would rather, because I just know I'd be more invested, not just for the time you're in this program with me.
Yeah.
So now I'm actually looking for people that have these incredible ideas that I can actually jump in as an equity partner in their business and scale and help them mentor, you know, for long term. Because it's, I've thought about the same thing. I'm like, fuck, I would not.
And because then both people are taking the same risk.
Like, yeah.
you know, we both need this to grow and succeed. Otherwise, no one's winning.
Yeah.
So
it's definitely a different way to think about it.
Yeah. And the reason I hadn't done it sooner was I needed a really great venture partner who could do – I'm not bad with, you know, building a financial model and cutting a spreadsheet, but I can't do all of the analysis that we need to do in, like, how big is the market for – I don't know, protein powders, and what's the competitor landscape like, and, you know, what's their sort of profit margins and go-to-market strategy, and sort of someone being able to analyze all of that and then actually be able to execute, like, all of the legalities around building a fund and having a financial license and all of that. So, so it took finding the right partners to be able to do that, to be able to get this off the ground. So
it's exciting. That's going to pop.
It's very fun.
That's very cool. Taryn, this has been amazing having a conversation with you.
I've so enjoyed it. Thank you for having me.
Thank you for coming on. Where can everybody find you?
So I'm just Taryn Williams, T-A-R-Y-N Williams, on all of the things. So it makes it very easy. So Instagram, LinkedIn, hit me up.
Amazing. Beautiful. To wrap this up, I've got a final question for you.
Ooh.
If you were to go back to your 18-year-old self and give her 30 seconds of advice, what would it be?
God. I think slow down and enjoy the journey. I think I was so dogmatically focused on the outcome and the goal and, like, rushing through life and, like, nothing was ever enough. I think just I had so many amazing experiences and I definitely didn't take stock and go, like, wow, this is a really incredible, you know, opportunity or place that I'm at. And, you know, I think if I just slowed down and enjoyed the process a little bit more.